This is the Careering into Motherhood podcast, and I'm Jane Johnson. Every so often, the universe seems to connect you with someone who profoundly affects your belief in humankind. And in my case, that's true of my guest today. Before we start, I must tell you that this episode deals with grief, death, and the loss of loved ones. It's not an easy interview to listen to, so please, if it's not for you, give us a miss this week. Before we start, I need to mention there was an issue with my microphone, but I hope it doesn't detract too much from your experience today, because the microphone is really given over to Sam to tell her story. Please be aware that my guest, Sam Rudd, wanted to come on and tell her story, and she volunteers her experience because it can be helpful for others going through something similar, and I believe Sam's strength and courage can even help us to help other people we will undoubtedly meet in life who experience tragedy, loss, and suffering. I met Sam through work a few months ago. We got talking and her story came up. We just clicked. She was so inspirational, so brave and courageous, and incredibly, for someone who'd been through so much that you would think no one could come back. She hadn't just come out the other side, but I found myself learning from her, asking questions of her, and telling her some of my life story. Sam is a single mother to three boys. Her husband, Alex, died suddenly when the boys were still very young. Unimaginable tragedy in a life that had already been exploded by tragedy. Sam goes on to tell her story, and I'm in awe of her and her unspeakable bravery.
Thank you very much, Sam, for agreeing to do this podcast and have a chat today. I know it's going to be a bit difficult for both of us and probably for some of our listeners, but it is one thing that we haven't covered in the podcast so far, and obviously it is something that in some way, shape or form, grief is something we are all going to deal with. Can I start by asking you at what point you were in your parenting journey and your career when you were suddenly thrown into this awful, tragic situation when you lost your husband?
Sure. So Alex died very suddenly when my children were 5, just 8 and 10. So they were really quite young. I, at that point, was running my own production company. I'd previously set up a partnership with someone and then kind of launched on my own. In terms of where I was in my career, it was a pretty successful company. I was working with very large brands, global brands, big advertising and fashion shoots. The job always did involve a lot of travel. There were quite a number of production companies. So in terms of marketing, I had to be out there meeting up with people, networking, and, you know, as usual. So when Alex suddenly wasn't there and I needed to be both parents suddenly, you know, I had to take some quite drastic decisions, not least, you know, we were living in Oxfordshire. My office at that time was in London. Most of the shoots were either in London or around the world. So, yeah, I had to take some pretty big decisions about what was going to be best for the kids. They had to take priority, and our family setup had to take priority. So ultimately, I ended up closing my office in London because it just didn't make sense to be travelling up and down, and, you know, time that I could be spent with them, because the priority, as I said, was them and their stability and emotional well-being. That's the only way it could be. I mean, I think, you know, as all parents know, particularly working mothers, I think over time we end up completely forgetting about ourselves and what our needs are. So, yes, it was about keeping the show on the road, basically, making sure that the boys, I've got three boys, making sure that they were as happy as they could be, that they understood what was going on, they could express their grief in whatever way they needed to express it, that I was in regular communication with their school, and just, yeah, just kind of juggling many, many, many things. And I think that the main thing at the time that really hit home for me was the responsibility. Suddenly I was responsible for three children on my own, and whatever I did or said was going to impact them because they were so little. They were looking to me to give them stability and guidance, basically leadership.
That must have been so hard when you yourself were having to manage your own grief and emotions. So you're talking about it now with a very, you know, almost leadership mindset. As mothers, we do that in a range of situations, subordinate our own feelings and emotions. But in a tragedy like this, did you just find yourself on almost surviving on autopilot, or was it something that you consciously did?
I think there was a mixture of things. I think there was autopilot. I lost both my parents when I was very young. I lost my mother when I was 5, and I lost my father when I was 15. So I went on to autopilot, but I also, very much at the forefront of my mind, was thinking about the things that I did or didn't have when I lost, certainly my mother anyway, and actually what the things that were really, really important that I knew I needed to do that were completely different from what had happened when my mother had died, in order to make the boys feel safe and loved and cared for, and kind of cushion this, the void that there was. I think with all parenting, you know, there's an element of abdication of self. So it was this left brain CEO leadership type thinking of, right, this is what I need to do, but kind of coupled with obviously needing to be a mum. It had to take priority over absolutely everything. It was slightly complicated by the fact that I actually was diagnosed with breast cancer about 3 months after Alex died. So there was a period of time where I was still having to manage their grief, but actually the driving force was making sure that they felt really, really safe, because the prospect of what could be was too enormous for me and for them. So I suppose autopilot's the right way of looking at it, but it was actually following my instinct as well, kind of really tapping into my inner resources because I had to. There's obviously no book as to what to do when a parent dies. I mean, maybe there is a book, but I hadn't certainly come across it.
And it's so personal, isn't it, as well?
Exactly.
I'm almost speechless with the amount of grief and the things that you have had to deal with. And we talk about so much in society today around self-care and that sort of thing. So for you yourself, in terms of having been through that as a very young child, and then you get married and have 3 children, and then you go through that again, and then you're facing your own mortality with breast cancer diagnosis. How did you remain so strong throughout all of this?
You know, I think that we all have, all of us inside us have, you know, the resources to build strength. I suppose I have got a natural characteristic to be strong. I suspect when I was younger, it was my strength was more that I built a wall around myself in a way to protect myself. The strength probably wasn't strength. It was more in defence of what was happening and defence of life. And over time, and it's definitely a work in progress, working on that, working on the kind of vulnerability side. I mean, even when I decided to have children, I had no maternal blueprint. So again, it was following instincts, really kind of learning on the job, so to speak. And I know we all do that, but I suppose in a way, I was just having to make decisions on what I would have liked as a child. Over the period of time when Alex died and finding out that, as you say, was confronted with my own mortality, it was actually, in some ways, a kind of, and I don't want to kind of it to be misinterpreted, but it was a kind of gift in a way, because it actually forced me to step back and actually only look at myself. Everything else had to come out of the equation for that moment and go, right, what do I actually need in order for me to get through this so that I can support my children? You know, I can still feel it and remember it very vividly. It was this sudden real kind of like peace and shutting down all the other noise and going, right, what do I need? And actually, again, following my instincts and what felt the right thing to do in order for me to continue to try to be as good a mum, both parents, as I could be. I think there was probably an element of me compartmentalising as well. I think I've just always done that. I knew I needed to be really focusing on myself at that particular time of the day, I would do that. And then obviously when I was with the boys, you know, I was mindful of, I was their mum. So just being present, watching out for the signs, trying to make sure that life was real, but as normal as possible. Cushioning the difficulties, I suppose, without taking away the fact that actually it was a reality that we were all living through, and just taking very gentle steps to move forward in a way that made sure that they felt safe and loved, and at a pace that was appropriate for, I mean, each child was in a completely different phase. So, yeah, it was difficult. It was difficult, but we got through it.
The understatement of the century. That's a really interesting point as well, isn't it? That when, you know, we're getting to an age where people who have grown up with their parents around them, you know, we're starting to face the parents that are being diagnosed with things, or, you know, and dying. If you're my age and, you're just really thinking about yourself and coping with your grief in your situation, you're stripping back everything. I love that idea, and just really focusing on what your children really, really need and being there to give that to them. But then this added layer of each child as a human being and dealing and coping with things in a totally different way, and you're their sole carer and trying to be all of those things to all three of them. I mean, I am just filled with awe what you've done, and the fact that you are now able to talk about it and you want to share that with other people and with a view to potentially helping others who may be facing similar challenges.
Yeah, I just feel very, very strongly that, you know, yes, things have been a white knuckle ride. There have been a number of white knuckle rides. Not that fun, but I've learned a lot. I think it's really, really important that I share the experience. It helps me, actually gives a reason for why I've gone through these things. I mean, you know, of course, when you're younger, when I was little, you know, there would be, you know, the why. Why is this happening? Why is this happening? And actually, it was one of the things that I was very mindful of with my children. I really wanted to create an atmosphere of acceptance of what was, which is what I was mentioning about reality. The questioning, I know it didn't help me, because you don't get the answers. There aren't any answers for why something's happened. It's just happened. So it was important that the acceptance, somehow or other, I managed to kind of convey that it actually became instilled in them that Daddy had died, but he was still with us. Life goes on. I was doing my best. So yes, it is important to me that it potentially helps other people by hearing parts of my story.
That is the objective of this episode of the podcast as well, not to pick over somebody else's tragedy, but to potentially show that you are still here, you are still able to smile and laugh. I don't want to say you go through it and come out the other side. I suspect you're always going through it.
The way I see it is, we all know we're going to die. That's fact. We can't change that. So, you know, we're all going through life. There's so many things that, you know, we all experience in life, and the death of a parent, whether it's when we're young or whether someone's older, is another experience. And of course, you know, if we experience it when we're little, as opposed to experiencing it, you know, when we're older, it's obviously the experiences are going to be slightly different, and children take away different things and different meanings. But at the end of the day, fundamentally, it's one of the things that connects us as human beings. And I think it almost doesn't matter what age. Obviously, children need looking after. And I think it's just looking at it from a human perspective as a part of going through our life, in a way. We never know when something's going to happen. So then it takes it back, which is one of the things where I love what I do. You know, our life is our life, and it's about making the most of our lives and enjoying every moment, even if the moments are really challenging, you know, enjoying what we can learn from it. Yeah, it's just our life. It's here to make of it what we will. I mean, I think one of the things I would say is kind of getting through it as well. I think one of the main things that's really helped at build the resilience in my kids is actually working with humour. I think laughing's really important. And I know sometimes when we're very sad or someone's died, it's incredibly hard to laugh. Because I laugh sometimes when I'm nervous. I laugh sometimes, you know, with black humour or whatever. It's helped certainly with my children carry us through some difficult times, actually. So, yes, we have been going through it, but there has been some laughter as well. You know, actually, one of the things I realise is that the more we get further from the point when Alex died, the happier and the more laughter there is in the house. And that makes me feel very happy, actually.
I know some people feel they're almost scared to put time between the event and now, because it feels like that person is moving away. But I love your idea that actually you can start to fill some of that time with other things, and some of it can even be laughter.
On that, Alex was very funny. I always actually wanted children with a sense of humour, and luckily they have got a sense of humour, my children. If one of my boys says something that perhaps Alex would have either appreciated or said himself, I can then reintroduce that. You know, there are times quite often that I'll look at them or they'll say something that reminds me of him, and I will make sure that I'll tell them. It re-anchors us and it reconnects us to him. So yes, the time moves forward, of course, moving away from the time, you know, when things happened. I find that there are definitely ways of reconnecting with him, for sure. You know, I mean, even, I mean, if they've done something that actually I absolutely know 100% Alex wouldn't have liked or have been quite cross about, I will say, if Daddy was here, he'd be really angry with you. You know, he wouldn't be very happy with this. You know, so let's just think about this. So, yes, time moves forward, but I find it possible that we can completely kind of keep joining the dots and reconnecting with that person, even if they're not there.
That is a lovely idea, a lovely concept, anyone that you've lost. This idea that you can still keep them very much part of the family. Has it changed your view of death? You created a very different experience for your boys from the one that you had as a child.
Yes, it has. I mean, if you're very little and a parent dies, particularly if it's sudden, certainly from my experience, I felt like death was around me. I wasn't frightened of it, but it was there, because my mother was 29 when she died, so I was 5. It's so young, but it definitely coloured my earlier life in a way. Not necessarily in a bad way, it was just there. Most 5-year-olds, unless they've experienced death in some, I think a parent and perhaps a grandparent, you know, you wouldn't really know what it is. I mean, I suppose you could experience if a pet had died. Well, I remember understanding things. It's just the finality of it and the shock of it is very different. But I think as you, and have experienced other deaths and kind of friends and things, it's deepened my connection, I suppose, with my essence, with myself, the world, the universe, and just trying to make sense of why we're here. And, you know, like I said, we never really find out why we're here. And I think each person's life is completely individual, obviously, to them. And actually just striving as I get older to really make the most of what I have, however many years left I've got, and just move from just surviving to actually really thriving. I mean, it's something I'm quite passionate about, particularly with women, working women. You know, I think we end up treading water for so many years because we're looking after our children or we're working on our careers, forgetting about ourselves, our parents. And I think at the end of the day, you know, all of these things happen, but if we can kind of work on our capacity to kind of manage all this as well as look after ourselves and enjoy our lives, or really love our lives, I think it's really, really important.
Sam, I want to thank you so much. You are a very brave and courageous woman, and it really has been an honour to meet you, quite by chance, but even more so to be able to talk to you today. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed being here. Thank you.
We kept the interview relatively short today. There's no real message or learning other than Sam's courage, Sam's bravery, and her unstinting love of her family and her boys. If you've been affected by any of the issues in today's podcast, please do ensure you get the help you need from grief counsellors or clinically trained specialists via your GP. Thank you to Sam, and thank you for listening.